Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show comes to you live and direct from sunny Southern California every day, reminding you when a train hits a vehicle or railway crossing. The results are often deadly. Be cautious at crossings. The signals are going. Don't be tempted to try and steer across the tracks. Even if you don't see a train stop, Trains Camp brought to you by NHTSA. Kevin Durant was joined by Draymond Green on his podcast. And Durant said the two were simply exchanging texts about what had occurred in the 2016 NBA Finals, which the Warriors lost to LeBron's Cavaliers, but never considered to be a sense of urgency on Draymond's end about getting him to sign with the Warriors in the offseason. This was Draymond's perspective on what actually happened.
It was this whole narrative of like, you call Kevin crying from the parking lot. I'm like, yo, this can be like, y'all added a theatrical sense to make this movie. Like, you know, you gotta make TV. You gotta add on a little.
I know.
So like, people just start pouring on, bro. But I wasn't about to come out and fight it. Like, at the end of the day,
it was just
however y'all think Kevin got here. That's your mind, yeah. Road. What helps you out?
Good with it. And also, okay, so this for OKC fans. They thought me and Dre was hanging out, literally like chilling with each other during the conference finals. And when I heard that, I was like, man, who y'all think I am? Who do you think Draymond would hang out with me during the conference finals, like over my house? Like, come on, stop the
exactly.
That's Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. Look, I have said this time and again, and I think this story gives it validity, which is it's fair for everyone to point out that Kevin Durant needed a title. We need to see him in a championship level competition in order to validate all of the previous successes. And would you prefer to be in Oklahoma City? Of course. Of course. But there was a sense that they were topping out, right? Like, that's Westbrook was Westbrook, and there just was a limit to how much growth was there. And Kevin Durant, I'm sure, was frustrated. In that exact same year, when they were up 3-1, the Warriors were essentially guarding him with two guys. You know, they're playing a zone on two players for the Thunder because they just didn't have enough shooting on their team. But this is what I've said, and I think this that podcast actually validates it, which is, yes, Durant needed the Warriors, but the Warriors needed Durant just the same, if not more so. Remember, Harrison Barnes was the fifth starter on that 73-win team that lost to the Cavs in the finals, and Durant essentially replaced him, and of course they had to scrap the bench in order to make it work financially. Now, I don't know how you look at it. I saw them win two titles. I think they win a third title. If Durant is healthy, we'll never know. But there are some people that, well, it wasn't a success. Like, what do you mean? They played LeBron the next 2 years in the championship and won it. And the guy who was the better player on the floor for the length of the NBA Finals was, in fact, Kevin Durant. Same position. So it was a success by anybody's estimation. Two championships, one a third NBA Finals, and then injuries led to them losing in six to the Toronto Raptors. They had stunning success. But the other thing it says is what all successful businesses and successful people know is that you evolve or perish. Right? Evolve or perish. And, you know, I think that the easiest example of it, the easiest example of evolve or perish is Amazon, right? What Amazon has become now, like, they protected themselves. Think about it. During the pandemic, they provided you groceries. They provided you TV entertainment, anything else you want to shop for, all one-stop shopping. That's it. All one-stop shopping. This is from Amazon, which was essentially eBay before there was eBay. But why did they buy Whole Foods? Evolve or perish? Why did Netflix and Amazon both start creating their own content on their own video streaming services? Evolve or perish? It's too expensive to buy Friends and to buy Grey's Anatomy and run those. And then you have to constant check writing fast to those people, you know, whatever. Like, the lowest overhead is actually spending the most upfront on, you know, owning your own movies and TV shows. And then you don't have to buy, you don't have to pay the middleman in terms of the network TV and sometimes the production company for the rights to broadcast it. Netflix and Amazon, you combine them with Nike. Nike has, in many ways, they moved away from third-party sales. Like, you go back 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and what would you do? You go to the mall, you go to Foot Locker, you go to Foot Action, you go get some kicks, right? And there were other, you know, you could do the mail thing with East Bay and with some other places. And, you know, then Zappos, of course, comes out, and Zappos like, look, we'll send you some shoes. You'll get them tomorrow. If you don't like them, put them back in the box and send them back. They're incredible. I'm not sure you were like Nike's moving to, you know, as much online sales as they can through their own website. So there's no third person. It's not just easier, but they make more money that way because there's not the extra mouth to feed in the Foot Action. It's diabolical to the Foot Actions and Foot Lockers, but the idea is it still works. It still works. Nike's the perfect example of evolve or perish. And that's what the Warriors figured out. And here's the other part to that exact same story that I don't know if people remember. After winning that title, coming from 3-1 down, the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James reportedly had interest in Chris Paul as a point guard. Remember, Kyrie Irving was like 24 at the time. He just played magnificent basketball, hit the big shot in Game 7 in the NBA Finals. And LeBron's like, yeah, we might want to upgrade. Why? Because LeBron operates by the same premise, which is evolve or perish. Evolve or perish. Yes, the Warriors, Kevin Durant needed the Warriors. He needed to compete for a championship. He needed to win a championship in order to solidify his legacy as one of the all-time great players. But let it be known, and it's pretty obvious, the Warriors needed Kevin Durant. They were very, very good without him. They needed to evolve or they would perish. The league was catching up to them, and they needed one more player. They needed a game changer. They needed somebody who could take over and just win them a game and win them a series. That was Kevin Durant, and that's what they got. And if you think it's a sign of weakness that they would go reach out after winning 73 games and losing in the NBA Finals, after nearly losing the Western Conference Finals, remember, they were down 3-1 in that deal. If you think that's a sign of weakness, then you're completely avoiding all of the different metaphors to life, metaphors to business, metaphors even to sports business in terms of you got to keep getting better, because if you're not getting better, frankly, you're getting worse.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Dan Lutz joins us, sports lawyer at Garrigus. Conduct Detrimental is his podcast. You can check it out. Dan, have you ever seen a case like this?
No, I have not. In the sports context, legal context, and I'm listening to your comments, Doug, I think you're probably spot on with Rusty Harden. He's a guy that litigates the cases in the press, and he's getting a little dose of his own medicine here.
Yeah, he's like, who told you you could do that? That's my game. That's what I do here, right? Okay.
And he's like, just in case, I'm going to have a press conference of my own today, because we're definitely not litigating the case in the press.
He's got a little Denny Crane to him. Have you ever seen Boston Legal, right? He's got a little Denny Crane. Okay, so how big a deal is it that, how normal is it, I guess, is it for a defendant in a civil case to ask for their accuser's names to be revealed?
It's going to happen 100% of the time. So we can throw that one out the door. In a civil case where you're being accused of a crime, you're always going to ask for who's going after you. So I've defended sex crimes case in the past and in a prior life. You're entitled to ask for that, right? There's going to be depositions, discovery. You're going to try to get text messages, cell phone messages, pictures. you need to know who's suing you. So you're always going to be entitled to ask for it. Now, what is a little atypical in Texas laws, just so people are aware, where I practice it over in New York, what would generally happen in this type of case, you would get access to the names, but usually with some type of sealing order or confidentiality order, because the public doesn't necessarily need to know who the accusers are. But if you're, the defendant in the case, you'd like to know. I don't know necessarily why the public needs to know, the accuser's name. And likewise, maybe this is a new point to some. I don't necessarily need to know that there is a lawsuit against somebody and that needs to be public, right? Why does Deshaun Watson's name have to be put on blast, right? Why are we not having the conversation that both sides can be anonymous? I don't know how necessarily newsworthy and how important it is prior to a judge putting his stamp of approval on the case. So, if I'm doing tort reform here, I'm saying, hey, let's let both sides be anonymous until the judge comes in and says, hey, there's something here. But I feel a little bit uncomfortable that we're basically litigating a case fully, and it's only been out for like 3 weeks. So yeah. I don't really like the precedent that's setting.
No, it's a really weird and kind of ugly precedent where they're having to go kind of back and forth. At this point, is there an out for Deshaun Watson? Because if he takes out the checkbook and writes, 18 checks or whatever, he writes however many checks he has to take, that to public opinion is an admission of guilt, even if it's not an admission of guilt in a settlement. Are we past that point of no return where this thing is going to, we'll have some sort of ruling on something at the end of the day?
I think we've passed it. And, the thing that I hear people say online, like, hey, you should have sort of paid, that $100,000 to that first victim and he would have been off the hook. The truth is, whether he paid her or not, we have 22 civil lawsuits filed. So maybe he saved himself, right, $100,000, because there would have been more people that came forward. I think, whatever people say about Tony Busby, he's done a very good job at bringing attention to this case. You could say that's the bad part about Tony Busby, but that's probably the part that has made Tony Busby, if you read his bio, he settled $2 billion of cases. So he obviously knows what he's doing. I think we passed the point of return with settling. Maybe it's a no-lose proposition at this point, because Nike's dropped him, right? Beats by Dre has dropped Deshaun Watson. Court of public opinion, he pays them at this point. That's not going to go well. And obviously a hefty suspension could come from the NFL. So really, this is a pure civil case at this point. Yeah, might be a case that you have to go all the way. Very few cases go to trial, less than 1%. But this might be one, right? Watson has the financial means to take a case to trial. And, these victims, if they're going to say it's not about the money, it's about making an example out of Deshaun Watson. On their end, right, would they take the money at this point? That's the whole position that Busby has set up, that it is not about the money. So maybe if he wanted to put the money on the table at this point, it's really not clear if they'd even accept it.
Yeah, no, it's that level to it. Okay, so what's next? What's the next step?
Next step is waiting to see what the police does. We have two separate police departments investigating this case, two separate Busby clients filed police reports with various police departments, one with Houston PD, another, I think, with Harris County, but I'm not positive. That's the shoe to drop, I think, on the NFL level. As Doug, as you know, the second there is a sniff of criminal charges, the DA puts their stamp of approval on a case and they say, hey, we think we can get beyond a reasonable doubt here, right? 90% guilt, whatever number you want to put on it. That's when the NFL is going to have a really easy decision on their hands. And they're going to say, hey, our personal conduct policy is something like credible evidence. It's very low. Beyond a reasonable doubt, it's very high. The DA's office takes it, we're comfortable suspending him. And that's what we saw, right, with the commission example of DeAndre Baker not so long ago, even though he actually ended up beating those charges. That said, if there are no criminal case, the DA's office doesn't announce those charges. NFL's got another really kind of slippery slope question. Do you suspend a guy with pure civil charges? And it's not what we saw with Antonio Brown, right? We don't normally see pure civil charges. NFL's done it, but, it's a lot of eyeballs. So you're asking me, Doug, as a betting man, I think it would be odd for the NFL to take a completely divergent approach from Nike. Nike suspended him, right? And, trying to protect the swoosh. And we know, Doug, the NFL protects the shield.
Okay, so let's say they want to protect the shield, right? But when you listen to accuser one, and again, like, something happened there, but what was described by, again, and this is more what I'm reading, is more... like of misdemeanor caliber, right? It doesn't feel like a brushing up of something against something and a forced brushing up of it. It's uncomfortable, but does it rise to the level of felonious assault? It doesn't feel that way. How much does that affect how the NFL proceeds?
I mean, if it was one case, it might affect it a lot, the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony. So people understand misdemeanor, that's, you know, the general definition is a crime that's punishable by up to a year in jail, and then felony is anything above that. If it's one case, it's going to make a really big difference. But if there's 20 cases, it's not going to make that much of a difference, because 20 times 1 year is still maximum of 20 years in jail. It's very serious. So, you know, if it's one case, yeah, it's going to make a world of difference. It was a world where Antonio Brown almost got charged with a felony for his rock throwing incident on a delivery truck driver, but it pled down to a misdemeanor. So different world. I think it's at this point really, it's a matter of quantity versus quality. I don't know what the quality of the charges yet, right? There's still allegations, but quantity is there. And in criminal law, you really just multiply it out. That's how sentencing works. How many charges and the maximum sentence. So it's not going to look good. If criminal charges come and you can say, hey, with all these different cases, you're looking at a maximum sentence of X amount of years in jail, it's not going to look good. Not going to look good for optics. And I think, the sponsors dropping him so quickly is going to put the NFL in a very tough position.
All right. So quick guess. How does this go?
I mean, it's really that linchpin is the DA's office if they just elect to take these charges. And I think, you'd be remiss. Tony Busby has put his foot in his mouth on a couple of occasions. I was just watching the press conference with Rusty Harden. He similarly, and maybe this will make news tonight, but he similarly made some foot in his mouth type comments. He said in a case about social media evidence that he is an idiot when it comes to social media. So, both sides are making some very public gaffes. I think the DA's office is probably leaning towards taking the case. It's a high profile case. And if they take it, then I think a suspension comes right after that. I don't know why, unless they just think that all these different sources are fabricating their stories. I think it's a case that DA's office is going to want to take, but they're going to take their time with the investigation. So timing wise, right, we got the draft, we got a couple things coming up. I don't think the NFL is necessarily in a rush to get this done. But we'll see. I think a couple weeks, the DA's office is going to sit with this, and then that's going to tell you if Watson's going to be in the field week one.
There was a thought, probably about 3 weeks ago when this stuff first started to come out, like, hey, the timing of all this is really peculiar. Here's a guy who's a star, just signed a contract, but just said he wants out of the city, and now all of a sudden, all this comes down after he... it's got to be very personal between he and Cal McNair in terms of why he doesn't want to work there. Now they don't have the option to move him. Nobody's going to take that. But is there a way in which you could see it be some sort of, not a coup, but some sort of attack on Deshaun Watson from somebody within the Texans organization because of his desire to leave the Texans organization?
I've seen that narrative out there. I think something that didn't get as much publicity recently was this one of these Tony Busby press conferences. And we'll see if it comes to fruition, Doug. But there is at least talk from the victims or the alleged victims camp and Busby's camp of potentially bringing the Houston Texans in on this case if they potentially knew of his propensity for these type of actions, maybe with any type of something that went on in-house. But he's saying he's conducting an investigation to go after the Texans. So anyone that's out here thinking, hey, the Texans are a part of this, they're on Team Busby, him making that type of comment tells you everything you need to know. And I guess it's important to note, we keep hearing from Tony Busby's side, the case is not about money, it's not about money. The Houston Texans have much more money than Deshaun Watson has. So even the inkling and the sniff and the aroma of the Houston Texans being brought into this case, it's going to take this in a much different narrative, right? Yeah, I don't buy any of those conspiracy theories. Obviously, you're not going to start a lawsuit against Deshaun Watson. It's going to tank his value for the team. So, yeah, I'm not buying it. And this case will take a very different and dramatic turn if the Houston Texans are brought into this.
Dan Lust, sports lawyer, does an awesome job. Check out his podcast, Conduct Detrimental. And, of course, his sports lawyer, Garrigus. Dan, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. Incredibly insightful.
Thanks, Doug. A pleasure.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Daniel Jeremiah joins us. Move the Sticks is the podcast, NFL Network, Chargers radio analyst. He was breaking it down earlier today on the Cowherd show. Let me start with Deshaun Watson. Like, Houston, you're just in a waiting game, but you talk to people in the NFL. Is he going to play any football this year?
I don't think anybody knows, Doug. Literally, you know, it's uncharted waters here where everything is. I think the expectation and talking to people around the league are this is going to take time. You know, I think when it originally started, there was some thought, okay, this will be, you know, it'll be done and wrapped up one way or the other here before the draft. And I think we're nowhere close to this being over with. So to me, it's everybody's playing the waiting game and trying to figure out, you know, what type of a suspension could be coming. Nobody has any information on that of what to expect. So again, really, we know nothing.
All right. Good talk. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, DJ.
Good talk, Russ.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Let's go around the league a little bit. We're having these second pro days, but it strikes me like you can't have an individual workout. Isn't that what a second pro day is? Like I can't have it. I'll just call it a second pro day, but it's really an individual workout.
It's exactly what it is. It's a private workout that's not entirely private. But what you can do is you can say, okay, you know, if you're Justin Fields and his representation and Trey Lance and his representation, you call the Niners and the Falcons at 3 and 4 and say, hey, we're gonna work out again. It's open to all 32 teams. I don't know how many are going to plan on coming. I would bet there won't be more than a handful. But when we get to this workout, you know, you guys run it, you know. So you want to – whatever throws you want to see me make that you haven't seen me make or you're curious about, you do it. You want me to run – you know, more movement stuff, more in the pocket stuff, whatever. It's just like it's a private workout. It's being dressed up as a second pro day.
Okay, so let's start with Justin Fields. Do you think the Niners are really on a Mac Jones, or do you think you just curious timing that they went to Mac Jones' first workout and not Justin Fields?
Well, I mean, I still think from the information that you have that's out there that it still points towards Mac Jones, but I don't think that the process has been closed. So, yeah, I do read into it a little bit that they, you know, were at Mac's workout right after this went down or the thing, you know, at that time. So that still points to him, in my opinion, but they're going through the whole process with all the guys. So, you know, I don't think it's – in other words, I don't think the decision's done. But to me, it's until I hear differently, it still points towards one person, and that's Mac Jones.
And what do you think of that fit?
Well, I think we talked about this a little bit previously, but it's, you know, it kind of flies in the face of the theory that most team builders have, which is it's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's. This is all about the X's and O's and not about the Jimmys and Joes. This is about who is the perfect fit for what we do. And the success that I've had with this system, finding somebody who fits perfectly inside that box, and that's Mac Jones. So, I think it's a good fit. I don't think that you know, he's more talented than the other two options that you would have there. But they are, if they do that, to me, they are drafting specifically to run exactly what they've always run, and not really trying to expand what they've run.
Yeah. Yep. No, he becomes a system quarterback. All right. So then who trades up to get number four? Who trades up to get the next quarterback?
Well, I keep an eye on Denver. They've just done so much work on the quarterbacks that, you know, Carolina, you know, got theirs with Sam Darnold. So I don't see them doing it. And that points next in line would be Carolina with the, you know, the potential, I guess, with the Patriots back there at 15. You know, if they see somebody that they like and they think they can go get, you know, it's just probably as close as they're going to be to, you know, the top 10. I think they're a high floor organization, Doug. So I mean, I just don't see them picking in the top 10, even without Tom Brady, with all the opt out guys back and all that. They're just, you know, they're going to be a 500 or better team. So this would be their opportunity to do it. So those would be the two that I would, you know, keep an eye on.
Daniel Jeremiah, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Who would the Patriots like the most?
For me, I think Trey Lance would make the most sense for them. Just in terms of what was on his plate at North Dakota State, the Patriots are kind of notorious for putting a lot on your plate. I think he'd be able to, you know, to make that transition. I think his athleticism you know, still it allows them to do a lot of things they want to do and mix in some quarterback run game we saw with Cam Newton last year. So to me, if I'm looking at both those options, and I like both of them, I just have Trey Lance in one spot over Fields. So and looking at it from a Patriots standpoint, I think that would be a good fit.
Okay. And then who's the best fit in Denver?
Well, I mean, I kind of just go back to how I have them stacked. So I have Lance over Fields, but I think either Lance or Fields, for me, they carry a much higher grade than what Drew Locke had. So I think either one of those are upgrades. I don't think they're going to be in a position where they get to make a choice. They'll be fortunate to see one of those guys there where they're on the clock.
What do you think of how Sam Darnold fits in Carolina?
I like Sam's fit there. You know, I always come back to the three P's, right? You want to go somewhere where you've got a good play caller, you've got some protection, and you've got some playmakers. And I think he's upgraded all three spots there, you know, going from the Jets to Carolina. And now they're freed up with that eighth pick where they can get a tackle, which they desperately need. And it's not a bad offensive line, and they get better there. And so I think with Joe Brady, you know, quick decisions, get the ball out of your hands and be able to move him a little bit if you want. I think Sam fits in well with what he wants to do. I'm excited to see him, Doug. I was big on Sam coming out. It hasn't worked out for a whole host of reasons, but I think this is the time where we can evaluate him. You know, it's going to be an environment where he should be successful. So we'll see how he does.
No question about it. I'm with you. I was high on him. I don't think he ever had the resources around him. And in fairness, like, he didn't play as well as he needed to play. I'm not sure how anybody plays in that predicament. Juju Smith-Schuster goes back to Pittsburgh, says he could have gone to Kansas City, could have gone to Baltimore. Feels like a one-year deal. He's playing the, hey, next year salary cap goes up, and he didn't have as good a year as he wanted to have. Was it a smart decision for him to go back?
Yeah, I think if you're going to do a one-year deal, you need to go to the place where you can optimize your production so you get back to the market in a good place. And, you know, to go through an offseason and try and learn everything and have everything on the line in 1 year and hit the ground running, I think would be a little bit of a challenge, especially, you know, some of the options where he was looking at. You know, Baltimore loves to run the football. Kansas City has a lot of mouths to feed. So to me, it's a familiarity. The quarterback, relationship that he has there with Ben is really good. And so you hope that you have a little bit better statistical season and then hit the market again. He's still a really young kid.
Yeah, I'm with you. Totally with you on that one. Look, Kyle Pitts is off the charts in terms of how people have graded him. He's like an X-Man, right? 6'6", 240, running a 4.4. But, like, for Atlanta, if they say, hey, we want to take the best non-quarterback, is he far and away the best non-quarterback at his talent to his position as opposed to, like, Sewell at his position? How do you evaluate the non-quarterbacks?
Yeah, for me, it would be Pitts. You know, he's the best player at his position. He's the best player at that position that I've ever evaluated. So that to me puts him in pretty rare air, and to me would be the best option there. I just, when I look at Atlanta, though, I just look at it, Doug. Like, technically, they've got three options, right? They can trade out, they can take a quarterback, or they could take another position. To me, I would not take another position. The value of that pick is to get your future quarterback, or the value of that pick is to cash it in and trade out. As much as I love Kyle Pitts and he is a special, special player, I think that the value there is quarterback one way or the other. Either you take one or you get a haul to get out.
Yeah, I'm with you. But again, if you think that can elongate your quarterback's career 2 years or 3 years or something with that type of freak athleticism, maybe, but I'm with you. The value is so much greater for a quarterback in this day and age, in any day and age, but especially this day and age, you almost have to trade out of it if you're not taking a quarterback yourself. Daniel Jeremiah, Move the Sticks is the podcast, NFL Network and Chargers radio analyst. Do you have a Slam Diego Padres t-shirt?
I actually personally don't have a Slam Diego Padres t-shirt, but all of my children do. I have a Machado, like a Manny shirt. And then I have like a Tatis shirt with his, you know, with his hair where it has like words in his hair instead of his actual hair. It's kind of a breaking t-shirt thing that they sent me. So no, I represent the pods, but I do not have that one.
Okay, so you don't really represent the Pods. You act like you do.
Wow.
I mean, you just,
wow.
How's Tatis doing with this new contract? I haven't looked.
Doug. That's tough. It's just not very nice of you. It's just really not very nice.
I hadn't looked. Is he not doing well?
Well, I mean, hopefully he's going to play again this season. That would be the first thing. We're looking forward to that, hopefully.
I'm messing. I'm just messing because the Angels are actually decent now. I'm just messing
because
listen, I love a helpless baseball team in Southern California too. Okay, so you know, I mean, I don't know if you
pitching though, Doug. We're going to be there in the end because we've got pitching.
I'm a little uncomfortable with the we, but I'm very happy for your baseball team. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My brother's a college assistant. He's been a college assistant for 25 years or so. And if you go and you listen to my podcasts, and there's some really, really good ones. Really good ones. And it's called All Ball. There's a coach named Todd Simon. And Todd is the head coach at Dixie State University. Now, Dixie State is in St. George, Utah. Used to be a really good junior college program. They went Division One, and they actually won their league this year, and now they're moving from that league to the WAC, the Western Athletic Conference. Todd Simon's a really, really, really good dude. And he's somebody who got his start. Coaching at Findlay Prep, right? And at Findlay Prep, he was the assistant coach, and he had 12 guys living in a house, and he and his wife had just gotten married. It's a true story. Like, you go to my podcast and you'll check it out. By the way, Todd's the head coach at Southern Utah, not Dixie State. Different school, also in Utah. I got to figure out where Southern Utah is. Southern Utah is in a different town. It's in Cedar City, Utah. Okay, so they won their league this year. They're also going to the WAC. They'll be alongside Dixie State. Anyway. When my brother got the job at Cal, he was at San Diego State for 8 years. When Steve Fisher first got there, they went from like 6 wins to getting the NCAA tournament, win their conference. So my brother gets to Cal. They need a point guard. So now he's in the Pac-10 and usually he can recruit a little higher level of athlete. He goes to Findlay Prep. And Findlay Prep that year had Tristan Thompson and pro after pro after pro. And he asked Todd Simon, he says, who should I recruit? He says, the Mexican kid with the ponytail. He's like, he's terrible looking. He's like, well, watch him for a little while, and you'll notice that every team he's on and every pickup game seems to win. And on the other team, if it's our team, it's another team, somebody always wants to fight him. My brother coached Jorge Gutierrez 4 years at Cal. He became the Pac-12 Player of the Year. He played in the NBA. He's gone back and forth between NBA, G League, and playing some in Mexico where he's a superstar. And to this day, every game that Jorge Gutierrez plays in, some of the other team wants to fight him. Now, that may seem like a bad thing, but it's not. And you know who else has that? Patrick Beverley and the Clippers. Rondo's got a little bit of that. Patrick Beverley's got a lot of that. And Patrick Beverley leaned into Suns point guard Chris Paul, giving him an elbow. Two officials were having none of it. They called Beverley for a flagrant 2 foul and ejected him. Clippers end up winning the game 113-101 because they have Rajon Rondo now. Another guy who people will sometimes want to fight. I thought a great pickup as a backup point guard for the trade. More of a true point guard than what Patrick Beverley is. But Pat Beverley, his gift is some of the other team wants to fight him every game they play. That can be harnessed. That can be used. That can be an absolute positive. Marcus Smart has that ability. Matthew Dellavedova has that ability. Those guys play hard and live around the border of what's clean and what's dirty. And as long as they're on the clean side, they're fine. But it definitely makes guys want to fight.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome in another B. Brandon Whedon joins us fresh off a golf course. Where'd you play?
We're at Oak Tree National playing a little Masters kind of tournament. It's a pretty fun little format. It's a two-man best ball with we all pick a pro and our scores and their scores combined. And we didn't finish DFL, but we didn't play very good. We're kind of right in the middle of the pack. So it was fun, though.
Okay. How'd you do? How'd you personally play?
Man, some good, some bad. I'm still not there. My game's just not as sharp as I'd like to be. It's still a little early. I mean, we're just now turning the corner and getting green grass. You know, around here it's pretty dormant, and out at Oak Tree the lies can get a little tight. So your iron game's got to be, especially with your wedges, got to be pretty dialed in. And right now I'm just not really hitting it close, making a bunch of pars, not putting it great. But you know, I mean, I don't know. Decent, but not great. Not good enough.
You need a hug? Do you need a hug? Do you want to do
please,
a radio?
Please, man. Yeah, I'm struggling, man. I was feeling sorry for myself this afternoon. I mean, I bet I didn't miss a fairway until the last tee ball, and then. But I still, I mean, I just making a bunch of pars. I can't make any birdies, man. I need some love.
Okay, we'll give you that kind of radio audio hug. You guys ever heard my thing on watching golf on TV on how it's a lot like adult films? Have you guys ever heard that?
I've heard it. I think I heard it last year when we had this conversation.
You did? Really?
I think so.
Okay. Ramos, have you heard it?
Yeah, the adult stuff?
Yes.
Yes, I heard it as well, yes.
Okay. All right. Should I not go to it? Because you can always pick up a tip from a pro, right? Playing it makes you want to perform it, all these things. All right, we'll get into that probably maybe a little later on in the show. Brandon Whedon is our guest. Okay, so they can have private workouts. But so what Justin Fields and Trey Lance are doing is they're having a second pro day, which is really a private workout, not really a private workout. You've been through it. You've done it. What are those like?
Yeah. You know, each one's different. What's tough about that is, you know, what they're trying to do is get you kind of out of your comfort zone. You know, your pro day is in your comfort zone. Every throw is scripted. You've worked on those throws, probably with those receivers, you know, a handful of times. You know, you can kind of know what to expect. You know what play actions you're going to have. You know, when these teams come in, you know, they're going to throw a couple wrinkles in there. I mean, they're going to, you know, they may get you on the board. They may ask you some, you know, coverage questions, protection questions, stuff like that. Just kind of get you uncomfortable and kind of get you out of your comfort zone a little bit. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I always had fun with that. I always kind of liked the challenge of it. You know, the throwing part I never had a problem with. I mean, I feel like back when I was throwing, I feel like, you know, you name a route, I feel like I could have made it, especially, you know, on air when is what they want. But, you know, these teams, you know, they want to know what they're going to get. I mean, it sounds like there could be four or five guys taking the first 20 picks. So, you know, these teams are obviously doing their homework and trying to learn more about them. You know, you got a guy like Trey Lance, obviously uber talented, big arm, athletic, you know, but the quality competition he's been playing against, you know, it's just call a spade a spade. It's not what, you know, Mac Jones has played against or Justin Fields and these guys like that. I mean, it's a completely different deal. So they're trying to see, you know, is this guy the real deal up close and personal with their own two eyes and kind of see if, you know, what he does in person kind of matches what they see on tape.
Mac Jones is just, I mean, he had an unbelievable skill set, wide receiver at running back this year as well in Alabama, causing some people to have him rise up the draft boards, maybe to three in San Francisco. But you look at him, you look at Justin Fields, you're like, okay, what am I missing here? Justin Fields looks like all of these new quarterbacks in terms of arm strength, success in college, ability to move the pocket with his legs. How do you, as a guy who's played the quarterback position, and look, you weren't a fleet of foot, but you had a cannon for an arm, you're deadly accurate, you're older, mature, you could read a defense. Like, how do you evaluate the foot speed, athleticism versus the football IQ and readiness to play between those two players?
Well, I mean, I think, the perfect package, if you got a guy that's got both. The way the league is, with the way the pass rush is, you've got to be, somewhat mobile, and you got to be able to get out of the pocket. Or you've got to have a system that kind of protects that, and keep you in the pocket, maybe max protect, play action, get you away from line of scrimmage, types of things like that, which is what Shanahan does. And I think we briefly talked about that last week. To me, of those two guys, you're talking about Justin Fields and Mac Jones, I think just what I know about Shanahan's offense and what I've seen in college of those two guys, Mac Jones may fit that style of offense maybe a little bit better than maybe Justin Fields. Not to say that Justin Fields can't do it. I mean, the dude's uber talented. I just think that system kind of protects guys that can't run around. I mean, Tom, there's been several guys, Brady kind of runs a similar system. I mean, they do the play action stuff and they do some similar things, but they're going to try to use Mac Jones if they do take him and do the things, the wide zone play action, keep you in the pocket and try to keep him in the pocket, let him get outside the pocket. But it's all based on, the team's system for one, two, the guys they have around him. Like you just said, I mean, he was at Alabama, and Mac Jones was at Alabama, and he had just dogs everywhere. It didn't matter what system you're in. I mean, drop back, find Waddle, find Devontae, find somebody and just throw it up. I mean, those guys are so much better. Well, it's not going to be that way in the NFL. It's going to be a little different. So, I hope for this, for those two guys, for all these quarterbacks, they go to a system that fits their need and they got players around that can help, because those first couple years in the league, man, it is a humongous learning curve. And I can't stress that enough. I think the jump from, and not necessarily, I mean, everybody talks about the speed, everybody talks about everything else, but just the complexity of everything you're doing, complexity on offense, complexity on defense. You have so much more on your plate. You got to find a guy that's going to fit that need. And that's a big word right now. Everybody's, Mel Kiper, every time you turn him on, or him, Todd McShay, do they fit that need? And that's what's going to be most important about these teams that are taking quarterback, especially early on.
Yeah, and then you got to support him once he gets there. I thought this was kind of right up your alley. I was watching Aaron Rodgers, and he said, look, I work 175 days in Green Bay. I have the bandwidth to do that and do Jeopardy. Jeopardy's 50 days a year. I know that we all want to point out, well, maybe Aaron Rodgers doesn't work as hard as others. Look, Tom Brady, he just took a vacation to Qatar. What you do in the offseason, is it possible to have a 50-day second job in the offseason and still be a great quarterback?
Gosh, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think it's ever been done. But, with the way they can film, it sounds like you film these 14 shows or whatever in 5 days. So if you can knock out 50 days worth of work in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you got plenty of time to do that, and just find a way. The TV, the way they do it now, they can find ways to make it look like they air it every night. But it'd be tough. I mean, I wouldn't put anything past that dude. Obviously, he's a very smart, cerebral guy. I wouldn't count him out. I mean, that's he's at the point in his career where, he's got a pretty good feel of what he wants to do offensively and those defenses. I mean, so even though he studies his tail off, I think if he wanted to do it, I'm sure he could find a way to make it happen.
Juju Smith-Schuster chose to go back to the Steelers. Now, he said, hey, look, I almost went to Kansas City for more money. It was actually just more in incentives. Baltimore is more money and a little bit more in incentives. He had kind of a weird relationship with Big Ben. Not a bad relationship, but when they were both kind of floating around, they weren't. Juju joined us on the show. He's like, I haven't really talked to him. When a guy thinks he's going to go get paid elsewhere and comes back for another year, what's that dynamic like?
If I'm Ben, I'm excited. I'm honestly a little bit surprised that Juju decided to come back. I mean, if I'm a young receiver and I got an opportunity to go play with, Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, you can go out and have a hell of a year and parlay that into a 4-year deal making 20 a year or whatever, whatever the going rate is now. But not that Ben, Ben played well at times last year, played not so well at times. I just feel like if I'm a young receiver, especially if I get an opportunity to go play with those two quarterbacks, and Andy Reid and all those guys that you know, that have these high flying offenses. I feel like if I'm a receiver, that's kind of what I want to be a part of. But I was a little shocked. I didn't. Once I knew that other offers on the table, I thought he may decide to go somewhere else, just given where Ben's at in his career and you know, kind of where they're at. I mean, they got a good football team, but you know, maybe he thinks he can be the number one. And he's going to get, you know, 150 targets this year, and if that's the case, then I definitely don't disagree with him. I think he may have made the right decision. So we'll see. Now, he's a good player, and you know, if he can go have a big year, then you know, go out and he'll make as much money as he can stand to make.
All right, Sam Darnold's kind of going through what you went through, only he's getting a chance to start at his new place, whereas you had to go be Tony Romo's backup, right? But you go through the kind of the, you're on a bad football team and all of your bad habits come out because you're running for your life, right? This is kind of your life early on in Cleveland at times. If you were to call Sam and go like, hey, man, let me give you a little bit of advice. I've lived your life. I know you're the starter. I was the backup when I went to Dallas, but your second tour of duty, your second team, how do you handle it?
You know, walk in there like, you know, eyes up, chest back, and this is your football team. I mean, come in there and just be the leader. You know, it's hard to do that when I couldn't do that in Dallas, obviously. But, you know, with, you know, he's a young player. I mean, I still think Sam Darnold can play. I really do, and I think he's in a pretty good spot there in Carolina. He's got a couple of really good receivers, obviously really good back, pretty good offensive line, and a good supporting cast. So, I, you know, if I'm him, I'm tickled to death. One, I'm going to a team that has a chance to win. But, you know, two, he gets a fresh start. You know, New York's tough. Everybody's beat him up and worn him out up there. Seems like he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders. Man, just go in there and say, hey, look, man, this is, you know, kind of shrug your shoulders and say, man, I got a fresh start. You know, it's a clean slate. Go out there, you know, just kind of embrace your new teammates, get to know everybody, and say, hey, look, here's the deal. We're going to win games, and I'm here for you. I mean, just be the leader. He seems like he is. He's a pretty mellow guy, but he seems like he's a pretty good leader on the field. He's got some savviness to him. So, yeah, it's not easy. It's easier said than done. It's hard to go to a new place and you're changing cultures and try to walk into one and kind of bring on your own. But, you know, everybody now knows. I mean, everybody knows he's a starter. You know, it's his franchise. It's his football team. Go in there and act like it and take the bull by the horns and let it rip, man. Don't hold anything back and let it fly.
What is that interaction with? Again, you came to Tony Romo's team, but you had been a starter in Cleveland. Teddy Bridgewater was the starter, is now going to be back to being like what first time you when you signed with Dallas. And again, granted, it's a different scenario. But what was that first interaction with Tony like at the facility?
It was awesome. I mean, he was like, hey, man, you know, glad to have you. Anything I can do to help, you know, don't hesitate. You know, I'm here to help you. If you got any questions, I'd love to help. He goes, you know, I've seen you obviously play the last couple of years. We played against him in 2000, I think it was 13 in Dallas. I played pretty good. We had a chance to win that game. And, you know, it was that. It was, you know, glad to have you. I mean, obviously, I'm not putting pressure on him. So he didn't have a guard up or he wasn't trying to give me the stiff arm. I mean, he was very, very welcoming and kind of welcoming with open arms. And it was great. I mean, he was always great. I learned more. I tell people this, I'm not exaggerating. I learned more in those 2 years with him probably than I did in my 7 years combined in the NFL. Just, you know, watching him work, some of his ideas, some of the nuance, just the little stuff that you know, the details that, you know, a lot of people don't work on and worry about. And, you know, I learned a lot just kind of sitting there. I didn't say much, didn't ask a lot of questions, but he taught me a lot. And he's, you know, you can see it on TV now. He's a very bright dude.
What was Jason Garrett like?
Jason was awesome. You know, he would come around, you know, the offense a little bit. You know, he had Scott Linehan as the offensive coordinator, and Scott kind of ran the show. I think Jason, you know, had his input. He was always great. And I always had a good time around him. He's a super nice guy. You know, he's very, I don't want to say, not cliche, it's not the word, but he's, you know, he's got his routine. I tell people the first team meeting I walked into, when I was in Dallas, I mean, you'd have thought the president was speaking. I mean, he gave his team speech the first time we were all together as a team, and he gave his little, team meeting speech. And I was like, oh my God, I mean, this guy, I almost had to turn around and look and see if he was reading off a teleprompter. I mean, he's a machine, you know. He's just, everything he does is, you know, kind of cut and dry, and, you know, there's no craziness there. He just, he's got a routine to him, but he was a great guy, and, you know, in my opinion, did a pretty good job down there. He had a tough job, and, you know, he won a bunch of games for that franchise.
All right. Well, we've given you the audio hug. You've given us a ton of information. Now go back and have a nice iced tea or a cold drink, a cold beer, and get after it again tomorrow. You do get to play again tomorrow, don't you?
No, we're done. I'm headed to the lake with some buddies first thing in the morning. So first I got to go call plays of this kindergarten flag football game here in about an hour and a half. So that'll stress me out. I'm sure I'll have to have a couple cold drinks after that. But then, I'm going to get up and go to the lake.
During. That's the thing. Like, I'm not coaching flag football tonight. I got basketball tonight, but the flag football is at 4:30. So be like, I'll have a cold one during the game if I'm not coaching.
I may have to sneak a Yeti or something in there just to see if I, yeah, because it, man, I tell you what, it's herding cats, but it's a lot of fun.
I'm sure it is. At the lake, you water skiing, you jet skiing, you driving the boat. What's your game?
No, we're going to, just like I said, some buddies, we're going to go play golf in the morning, and then we're going to get the boat in the afternoon. We'll probably just go out, tie up, have a cooler full of beer, and kick back. No, the water's too cold here, man. We haven't turned the corner weather-wise, so it's a little too chilly to get in the water. So I'm just going to, kick back, relax. I've been dadding pretty hard, so I need a couple of days to have a little restart here.
I've been dadding pretty hard,
and then I'll come back and dad hard.
I've been dadding pretty hard.
I told my wife. I said, "Listen, I'm going to be watching the Masters regardless. So I can either sit on the couch and watch the Masters here, or I can go to the lake with my buddies and watch the Masters there." She's like, "Get your ass out of here! Go to the lake! Get away from me!" So I got a free pass. I'm out. I'm going.
That's awesome. Way to take control. Good job. Enjoy the lake. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.